Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you, coming to you from Cold Springs, California, deep in the Sierra Mountains, not far from Yosemite. Thank you. Not far from Yosemite. And I'm with Pastor Steve Walker from Central Valley Presbyterian Church, a family integrated church in mid-California. And today we want to talk about community. He is working on a doctoral thesis relating to the issue of community within the church. And this is something that's been on my heart for a long time. But Steve, before we get into building community, let's talk about the present situation. I think Francis Schaeffer would talk about being lonely in the city. There's a new book out called Alone Together. And what we find in the modern world is a real issue with loneliness. There are six times the percentage of people living alone today as were 100 years ago. That is six times the percentage of people living alone, which means that people are far, far more lonely today than they've ever been. And I think that a lot of that is due to the fact that we've encouraged a self-centered, narcissistic, existentialistic worldview through media and through the mediums that we've created for them, including the iPods and all the rest. And every kid has their own television, their own bathroom and their own bedroom. And people are having a hard time connecting today and creating community. And yet you have so many attempts. I mean, how many community fellowship churches have you seen? I mean, you know, they use the words. People want community. I've never run into anybody who said, "I'm against community. I don't want relationships. Fellowship, give me a break. We're not about fellowship at this church." Okay, I've never run into that ever before. But where are we? What's happened to us in the postmodern age?
Well, Kevin, I think you mentioned something important with Sherry Turkle's book, Living Together. It was a study by an MIT professor who's been concentrating her work in robotics and in studying the current generation's tethering, if you will, to technology. And what she's found is both sides of that title. It's a great title. One, people are alone in the sense that they are isolating themselves, whether it's in the bedroom, if it's in front of a screen on their iPod or their computer. And yet they think that they are in virtual community with all of their virtual friends. And then if you reverse the title, you can be together. You can have a lobby full of people, let's say in an airport terminal or what have you, and yet they're all alone because they are tethered to their technology. And that's the type of scenario that we're working with today. We don't have the neighborhood parks. We don't have the bowling alleys, the social clubs, as much being the place, even the grocery stores, where people used to be gathering together to build relationships. And that's been a real concern of mine as you look at people who used to be moving to the suburbs, but even now are spreading themselves further out to not only isolate themselves from other people. And in California, of course, we build our fences high to separate ourselves, even though we're sometimes close in proximity. But have also seen the fragmentation of the family within the home.
Yeah. And that may be the root of it, if you think about it. The fragmentation of the family, the fact that you have 41% of kids born without fathers, and a huge percentage of kids that aren't raised by mother and father for 18 years. In other words, there's some level of fragmentation, not as if every family is equally fragmented. But you have to admit the fragmentation ratio, or however you want to construct that, is much higher today than it was in 1950, in 1920, in 1900. So the fragmentation of the family, the breakdown of the father-son relationship, has really led to pastors, leaders in communities, fathers and mothers in the new generation that have no idea how to relate to each other. Yeah. This must be the root of it. I mean, what's your take on that?
No, I fully agree. And it's obviously catering to the passivity, natural passivity that men have in having difficulty in leading their families. It allows for the mothers to have an easier time. Not only are their children engaged in the public schools, but as soon as they get home, they can go to their bedrooms where they have the full media complement available to them. They've got their own television screen, their own computers, their own cell phones. and so on. And in fact, if it's dinner time, you can text each other from one bedroom to the next to let each other know the updates. That's the type of community that we're dealing with as a church, of trying to convince our neighborhoods, our people, that there is such a thing as authentic relationships.
But people have Facebook friends. But people can interact with their pastor by texting him. There's community. There's relationship building going on there. Isn't there, Steve? We have so many ways to communicate today. Through Facebook, through texting, through non-relational forms. I mean, some people I've heard are afraid of talking on the telephone to somebody, let alone meeting somebody face to face.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, telephone conversations these days, if you hear the telephone call for a lot of kids, it means that somebody's died or there must be something important that is happening that has justified a phone-to-phone conversation. Mm-hmm. As you say, in person is difficult too. And I think here's part of the problem. We've gotten into, you mentioned narcissism earlier. We've gotten into a realm of communication, one, where even our ability to communicate has been hindered. We have mastered the three-letter acronyms that stand for a wide range of emotions. And our texting, our desire is to get as much into a short text as possible that expresses a whole wide range of emotion and intent. And then you've also got the narcissistic element where you are creating an avatar that represents yourself, not really. It is the exaggerated self. It's what you, especially what a lot of these teens, what they want to be. So they spend all day collecting photographs of themselves that really represent themselves in the angle and the way that they want to be seen by their friends. Or they will, whether it's the gaming sites or the social networking sites, they will portray themselves, whether it's thinner or older or even sometimes a different sex even. We've have a situation where people are trying to create a better image of themselves as they would want to be perceived by their friends. They are shortening their communication, and at the same time that all of this is taking place, they're cheapening the face-to-face relationship. They are, in fact, afraid in many cases of developing too deep a conversation.
Steve, I know it's hard to be prophetic about these things, but if we were to fast forward to 2040, what do these kids look like after 30 years or 40 years of this superficial relationship building, the superficial levels of communication, superficial relationships within their family, 150 broken church relationships over the past 30 to 40 years? What happens over time with all of the superficiality? Do we have an improved state of affairs in the year 2040, or are we in some serious, serious trouble?
What do they look like on the computer or in reality?
In reality, yeah. In reality. I mean, maybe they've still got their avatar.
Yeah, that's right. They'll all be 30-year-olds in perfect shape.
Oh, yeah.
No, in 2040, I think we're headed for a very drastic situation.
Yeah. The family is going to be in shambles.
Absolutely.
At the very least. And we're not improving family relationships if we're not going deep, if we're not willing to build relationships in the present day. So it's really time to start building those relationships now. We've got to find better ways to build community in a postmodern age.
Absolutely. You're seeing extended adolescence in the men. They're now into their 30s before they're actually ready to be married and have families. You've got girls that are they're no longer waiting for the men to be mature to marry, so they're moving into the work world. They're seeking themselves. Whatever we knew as the biblical nuclear family is at serious risk. It has been for at least a generation now, but we are seeing the results of the boomer generation and the self-centeredness that marked the boomers.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, solution to the present conditions. We've got to find something. And here we have two pastors rather desperate in a search for community in the 21st century up in the Sierra Mountains in California. And we're going to talk solutions in just a moment to how are we going to build community in the next 10 to 15 years in building the church and the family. That's next on Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. back on the Generations broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, your host, and today we want to talk about building genuine community. This is something that's on the heart of a lot of people. Steve Walker is with me. He's pastor of Central Valley Presbyterian out here in California. We are, again, deep in the woods of the Sierra Mountains at a family camp that Steve Walker's church is sponsoring. And Steve, let's talk a little bit about community. People are seeking community. I mean, they're coming to your church. Your desire has been over the last 7-8 years to build community in a different sort of way, and people are interested in this. I think people are getting sick of the superficiality that's out there. I mean, we need to build churches based upon more significant truth and relationships. I mean, we need to go to 180 proof truth and 180 proof relationships, both. I mean, there are some churches want to be big on truth, get back to the Westminster Confession of Faith, and or get back to the London Baptist Confession of Faith, or just root yourself in truth and fight tooth and nail against anybody who disagrees with me. And they are committed to truth, and I commend the commitment to truth. But the commitment to love and relationships and to go deep and to go for longevity and to go through the conflicts and to build good, solid community in our churches is also, I think, an equally important part of bringing things back together in the 21st century, where we live in a lost and lonely age. We're living without truth and relationships. And I think it's the church's responsibility to really address both aspects of this as best as they can.
Totally agree, Kevin. I think that as you look at biblical examples of churches living in community, if you look at Acts 2, for example, you've got families that were living their lives in common. If you look at 1 Peter 1 and his exhortation to the people, he's talking about having an obedience to the truth for a sincere love of the brethren. He talks about loving one another earnestly from the heart. And you said superficiality, which is truly a great adjective for how I would describe most churches today. There's a superficial gathering. Maybe there are some key elements that identify a church. And so we have churches gathering, but it's so much is superficial. Yeah. What we need today are congregations that are living with longevity, that they're avoiding the we've got many churches that are like the corporate world, where we invest our lives for a few years and we go down as consumers to the next thing. We need some longevity. We need time to plant and root and get to know one another. We need churches where it's okay to have authentic relationships that have some conflict.
Yeah.
We work through Amen. Our conflict Amen. As we see good marriages of men and women who are committed to the marriage. And so they, in the midst of their conflict, they always have the goal in mind down the road that they're truly not letting the sun go down on their anger.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is reflected in the church. We see the church is something worth fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. we have people, as Peter says, as I mentioned a moment ago, who love each other earnestly. And to have that type of church, that is where you're going to see community.
You know, Peter talks about the sincere love of the brethren. And what you said about the superficial love that people have for each other, you know, maybe it is an insincere love. Maybe it's just the opposite of what Peter is commending in 1 Peter chapter 1. Maybe people are insincere. Maybe when they come together in these temporary little relationships where they all do something, they watch like spectators that something happens and some show is put on in front of them, and then they all get out of the foyer of the church and they go to the restaurant and they climb back into their car, and then they get back plugged into their iPods, and they climb back into their own little lives. They're really not building relationships. They're not really developing sincere love of the brethren in the body of the church. And of course, it is somewhat anonymous. This is another problem we have. And, you know, again, when we think of the relationships within the church, we think of relationships that are tied together where people know each other, where people are able to understand what's happening in the other person's life, where Peter can come up to Simon Magus and say, I believe you're still still in the bond of iniquity only because he knew him. He knew where his heart was. Well, how did he know where his heart was? Because he had some form of relationship with him. You couldn't be anonymous in the New Testament church, could you? I mean, people knew who you were. Right. You met together. You knew each other's names.
Well, and as we were talking about some of the elements that make up a true community, the things that come to my mind and have come to my mind over the years are what we're really describing is a functional family.
Okay.
We're talking about relationship, you know, crisis, longevity, proximity, working through conflict, all of these things that really describe a biblical functional family. And it suggests one of the ways to create community in the church. And one of those ways is to build, not only build families in the home, but to have a very conscientious and intentional ministry in which we are exhorting men and women to turn their hearts towards their children, to solidify their marriages. Because honestly, Kevin, this is what I think where we miss it. We get part of it in many of our churches today where we say, well, we need to create small groups. And really what small groups are, they're smaller environments that allow for greater proximity and sometimes perhaps some greater service and love for one another. And we do see some success there.
Yes.
But what we're missing is ultimately the focus upon rebuilding and strengthening the family that we talked about at the very beginning is fragmenting even further as we go through each generation.
In other words, you're not getting longevity in some of these small groups, and you're not getting longevity in many of these families.
And we're not we know
we don't. Yeah, we don't get longevity in families because the divorce rate is through the ceiling. The shack-up rate is 10 times what it was in 1970. And you have so many children born without fathers, so the relationships aren't even there with their own fathers or mothers.
That's right. We've got parents picking up their children at school or wherever it is, and they can't look up from their own cell phones.
And how do you build a church on bad marriages? You know, how do you build a church on bad families, on fathers that aren't engaged? Of course, if you don't have fathers that rule their households well, how in the world are you going to have elders to rule in the household
That's
of
right.
God? So what we have to have first is a nucleus of good families. And so you start with that. Now let's talk a little bit about Central Valley Presbyterian. Now, 7 or 8 years ago, you built this church with a core group of 6 or 7 families, as I understand it. And this thing has grown over time. I mean, you've touched the lives of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people over those years. And I preached at the church on Sunday, and it was a wonderful gathering. We had a pot providence afterwards. We brought their food together, and we had a great time of fellowship. You had the men's group meet together, as I think you do once a month. Mm-hmm. And we had a great time talking about mentoring our young men, our sons. But here's one of the amazing things about your church. You have the widest diameter of people who come to your church, of any church I know. That is, people come from 2 hours away from one side or the other. I met some people who came from an hour and a half away, all the way from San Francisco. I met some people who came from 2 hours south, 2 hours north. I mean, people are coming from all over California to your church. Why?
Well,
why are they coming?
They're starving for community. And so they are willing to sacrifice, well, they're willing, what I would call suspend reality for a while, and sacrifice the distance to come to something authentic. Because, you know, you and I were talking before the program about whether or not I was pessimistic or optimistic about the future.
Yes.
And as you look out, and as we talked about at the beginning, it's very easy to be short-term pessimistic. But what I've discovered is that when you have authentic community taking place in the church, the Lord has built it in us. If the Holy Spirit has regenerated our hearts to seek Him, to love Him, He has built it in us to look at authentic community and go, ah, that's what I'm missing. I'm missing it in my family. I'm missing it in my neighborhood. I've been missing it in my church. And this is worth traveling to. Now, it's not something that we want to do perpetually. It's not something we want to do indefinitely. We're desiring to plant new works in the geographical areas that our families are coming from. But the reality, you ask the question, why are they traveling? They're coming to that.
They want community. That's I think right. A lot of people want community. Now, of course, as I said, it's rare to find somebody against community. The problem is we have to define it. Community is not just bringing anonymous people into the same building. We do that right. In these big cities all the time.
It's not just fellowship.
You have millions and millions and millions of people in New York City, and they're lonely, really, really lonely. And you can do the same thing in your mega community fellowship church of somewhereville, Kansas.
That's right.
So you've got to be careful. We're not about building community in some mega church. We want to build community based upon what? Based upon
real relationships,
which is what? Which is love, which is sacrificing for each other, which is getting to know each other enough to know how to sacrifice something for each other, which is getting to know somebody well enough to have a crisis so that you can forgive them of something.
Right.
Think
it's
about
being
this.
Committed to the church, that's so worth fighting for.
Steve, I'll tell you what. It takes sometimes 3 to 4 years before you get into conflict with somebody. Okay, 3 to 4 years. And again, longevity is part of this equation here. You've gone 3 to 4 years and you finally reached the point where you're going to have a conflict with somebody. Praise God. Now you get an opportunity to forgive them.
Yep.
Because forgiveness is the warp and the woof of the Christian life. So I think people are afraid of that, though. They're afraid of crisis. They're afraid of conflict. They're afraid of having to forgive somebody because then they might have to over...
They're afraid of phone calls.
They're afraid of phone calls, yeah. And somebody might confront them with something.
That's right.
And they're afraid of truth or the application of truth. What if the pastor preached about modesty and now they got to go apply it and somebody else applies it in a different way than they do? And now they've got to kind of work through that and appreciate some of their differences and not be too judgmental, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But all of that happens if the truth is preached.
Exactly.
And if there's the unfeigned love of the brethren, as Peter speaks
of. That's right. There's got to be both truth or orthodoxy. There's got to be practice. And that practice is what is bringing these families to the church or other churches like it. And it is what will create an environment that will help these families coming out of our society say, this is what I want, and I'm willing to sacrifice for it. Not only just to drive, but I'm willing to be vulnerable. I'm willing to be authentic.
Steve,
I'm willing to be known.
Steve, I overheard somebody speaking about attending a mega church in the Chicago area. This would have been about 10, 12 years ago, a long time ago. And I never forget what he said. I just overheard what he said. He said, I like attending this big old church because when I was attending a small church, I was hearing people's problems. I don't want to hear about anybody's problems.
Yeah.
I just want to go to church.
Well, we've got to battle that.
It doesn't sound very godly, you know. Yeah. It doesn't sound Christ-like.
But I will bet that this is an individual who has been struggling probably in his own family relationships.
Probably, yeah.
It's an individual who has been struggling in his relationship with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And those, you know, you mentioned truth and practice. Those are the two areas where we need to be hitting it as a church.
Mm. Absolutely. Do you think that the average person attending some church out there is longing for community? I mean, deep down somewhere he knows something is lacking in the present day church.
I see families like that all the time. There are many, many people, as I said earlier, I think the Lord has built it into us to seek authentic relationship. The enemy has hit us with multifaceted weapons, whether it's individualism or secular humanism or social Darwin, narcissism, you name it. The enemy has worked for over a century to build American society the way it is right now.
Mm.
But God has the power to destroy that in a moment.
Yeah.
He has the power to break a hole through the wall and bring a family into real community.
Steve, I have to say that over the years, I've seen so many failures. I've seen so much inauthentic relationships within the church. I've seen a breakdown of community many, many, many times. I've seen the fakiness that happens in churches. I've seen conflicts that were never resolved. And I mean, I've seen it 100 times if I've seen it once. Mm-hmm. What I would give to build godly community, more godly community, and see this improved over the next 10 years of my life, what would you give to to see godly community built into the church in the 21st century? I mean, how important is this?
Well, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what our attitude has to be. Yeah, we talked about whether authentic community on the family level was answering the question, is this really worth fighting for? Well, the leaders have to believe the same thing.
Yeah.
They can't just be committed to preaching the truth. As important as that is, there also has to be right practice. Because you can have a cold, dead church that's very orthodoxically precise and correct.
Yes.
And this what we've been talking about, this living out in allowing for conflict, living for Christ, allowing for crisis, teaching people to love each other earnestly, actually addressing men and telling them to turn their hearts to their children and to their wives and become active leaders in the home, talking to the parents about actually spending time and building relationship at home and then seeing that spill over to the church, it takes a lot of work.
You know, Steve, I think also loving people who aren't just like you. I find that within the church, there are people who are fairly mature in the faith that have a very hard time loving people who are immature, have never really learned all that much. And they get upset with them because they're not where they are, and they get, you know, so upset they want to take off and leave. People have a hard time interrelating generationally within the church. You have older people that have a hard time staying in a church with younger people. You have younger people having a hard time staying in a church with younger people. You have some who have graduated, their homeschool graduates, and they don't want to hang around because they're done. They've done that. They want to go to another church that is closer to their age group or meets their specific needs or what have you. We need to be a kind of church that can interrelate with others who are differing in gifts and differing in maturity and differing in age and differing in all these different aspects. And it seems to me that people are always seeking out their slots. Even if they're going to a small group in a mega church, they're looking for the twice divorced children of alcoholics. Where does that group meet? Where does the young couples meet? Where does this group meet? Where does that group meet? Instead of looking for a cross-generational church that is going to hang in there for the long term. I mean generations. I mean 30, 40, 80 years where you have grandparents and great-grandchildren meeting in the same church because, hey, they're able to relate cross-generationally. Mm-hmm. They're able to relate to people who don't think and act just like them. Mm-hmm. They have enough patience to work through doctrinal differences. I mean, they're actually able to work through doctrinal differences over a long period of time. They're willing to engage the fruits of the Spirit, the long-suffering, the gentleness, the love, the patience, the humility, mm-hmm. to work through doctrinal differences between people within the church. But they're always seeking their slots, always seeking their slots, always seeking their slots. I think when people are seeking slots that are marked out by X number of propositions or marked out by age or marked out by family condition, marked out by this or that or the other thing, they're resisting relationship. They're resisting what I would call love, because love is able to transcend those things. Love is able to set those things aside. And of course, Jesus transcended a universe to come and minister to prostitutes. We ought to be able to do that too within the church. And if we can't do that, we're no church of Christ.
That's right. And the truth is, they're only perpetuating what they've already been doing in society at large. I mean, it should be totally expected by us that they are looking for what you said. They're looking for the slotted groups. They're looking for their own age, their own interests, whatever it may be. They've been doing that the whole time. What we have to do is, and this is where I have a little bit of trouble with the small group philosophy, it's not so much that I disagree with the idea of proximity, it's that so much of the time the church just leaves it there. It's the attitude of let's create an environment and it will happen naturally. Well, it doesn't just happen naturally. You actually have to have a leadership, one that models incarnational living in their own family and is shepherding intensively and intentionally within the church community and mediating relationships and helping people to get past the superficiality they've been living in so that they can see whether it's in the small group, whether it's in the corporate gathering, mm-hmm. whether it's in this program or whatever it is that the church does, they are assisting the people to become real.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're as sick of superficiality as I am. I mean, it is time to seek something authentic. And we're looking for authentic truth and relationships in a lost and lonely world. And by God's grace, I think we're going to get there. We're going to actually achieve some of this. Obviously, we're not going to see anything perfect happen. No utopias here on planet Earth until Christ returns. But we are trusting that God will give us His Spirit, and we will be able to build godly relationships that just exude 100 times more love, joy, peace, and long-suffering than we had in the last generation. We need to rebuild these churches. Steve, I have to tell you, I think we're probably in one of the worst states in all of Western history in terms of the status of the church. And I think a lot of people agree with us, at least in terms of how much apostasy, how many people are denying truth, how many splits and divisions and schisms are going on, and the percentage of people that call themselves Christians today in Europe and America. I mean, we are looking at a massive, massive, massive apostasy. But there's still, I think, amongst a true remnant, a desire to see something rebuilt, some solid kingdom work. You know, we're back to Jerusalem. I told somebody at lunch, I think we've just barely got the first layer of bricks down. I don't get the feeling we're halfway through building this thing right now. I feel like we've just started. Do you get the same sense? We got something going here, but we've just started.
Yeah, we've got to have men like Nehemiah who survey the walls, who go out and realize just how far and how decrepit the walls have become, and then are willing to join the fight, who are willing, as I said, to incarnate Christ in their lives.
Well, folks, so we are out of time, but we are talking about something very important that is really, I think, deep in the hearts of many of us, many of our listening audience, and many folks out there. They want to see more relationships in this lost postmodern age, and we're trying to do that in the family integrated church movement, and anywhere in which there are churches encouraging stronger family relationships, anywhere where the family is being reintegrated, anywhere where the church is coming together and learning how to work through conflicts over 10, 15, 20, 25 years. And we have core groups of elders and members within the church hanging in there together and building the Church of Jesus Christ with deeper relationships. Anywhere there's a lack of this anonymity and a real accountability going on, and people really want to open up their hearts and say, this is where I'm at, brother. I want to confess sins to you and to God here this morning, and I want to get right with God here. Anywhere where that kind of thing is happening, I think we're starting to see the rebuilding of community and the rebuilding of relationships in the present age. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can interact with the program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.